Blog Talk Radio.
There's the snap, hand to Riggins. Good hole. He's got the first down, the 40. He's done. The 35, the 30, the 40. He's done. He's done. Touchdown, Washington Redskins. Woo-hoo.
Kick up. Kick it on the way.
It's good. It's good. It's good. Adam Vinatieri goes to 40. 8-yard field goal. And the game is over. And the Patriots.
Gets the snap. He's back. He pumps. Scrambles around. Throws it back corner of the end zone. Santonio with a touchdown. Santonio holds. I don't know how he did it. Dominique Rogers Cromartie doesn't know how he did it. But they rule touchdown in the far right corner of the end zone.
In motion. Comes right. Back to throw Montana. Steps up, throws. Touchdown!
The rush. Gonna be hit. Gonna be sacked. No, he got out of it. Now he fires downfield. And it is not caught at the 24-yard line. How in the world did he do that?
Good evening, all. Welcome into another Frat House Sports' Red Zone Blitz. Frat House, my coming to you here. Hey, it is Monday night. Yeah, not Tuesday. Normally, you might be expecting us on a Tuesday night if you're tuning in tonight. Appreciate you making the adjustment. But we kind of thought, well, look, tomorrow's Halloween, and, it might be a little bit of a hassle for our schedule. If it's a little bit of a hassle for our schedule, it's probably going to be perhaps maybe a little bit of a hassle for your schedule. So, look, why don't we just bring the program here to you one day early? And, yeah, we are missing one game, but that game is going to be kicking off here in about an hour and a half anyhow on Monday Night Football. And you can bet that Brandon and I will touch on it, I promise you. So we will touch on the Monday Night Football game. In fact, we'll do that right at the top of the program. So anyhow, we are here on a unusual Monday evening to take a look at Week 8 and some of the things that went down, particularly yesterday. Midpoint, kind of the midpoint. I guess not the exact midpoint. Used to be the exact midpoint of the season, but then we have bye weeks in there now. And so really the exact midpoint of the season next week. But for all intent and purpose, we could call this the mid-season program. And interestingly, as I was putting the program together this afternoon, it occurred to me that many of the games that we're going to be taking a look at here this evening, at least the bigger ones anyhow, all featured division leaders. And so I kind of figured what we would do is kind of just say, we'll call this the division leaders edition of the Red Zone Blitz tonight. Because some of the games, and look, I'm going to run it a little bit like last week as well, because I have a funny feeling that a lot of our conversations about some of these games are going to spin off into conversations about other games that perhaps maybe are not on the agenda. But that's A-okay. Because that's what we do on a Monday or Tuesday night when we do this program. There's a team out there that played yesterday that won and should have, as one might expect, against the Cleveland Browns, the 0-8 Cleveland Browns, Minnesota Vikings, 6-2. They took care of the Cleveland Browns. That's what you're supposed to do against the Cleveland Browns. But still, nonetheless, my questions remain about the Minnesota Vikings. And maybe what I need is I need my team to play against the Minnesota Vikings before I will actually know what the Minnesota Vikings are. I'm not certain what the Minnesota Vikings are, because in the win-loss column, they sit atop their division, so they're a division leader. And I think at 6-2, we might just all be just about ready, I suppose, to announce that they're probably playoff bound. But are they just one of those teams that Brandon likes to talk about that, hey, they're a one and done in the playoffs? Well, we'll touch on that one and we'll find out. One of those teams I think that's definitely a one and done in the playoffs could be the New Orleans Saints, a division leader, yes, because they took care of the Chicago Bears yesterday as well. And see, the problem with the New Orleans Saints is you can't talk about the Saints without talking about the Carolina Panthers, or perhaps maybe even the Atlanta Falcons. I will say this, I'm prepared on this evening's program to declare the Carolina Panthers as complete and utter frauds. There's no doubt in my mind. After yesterday's performance, I don't give a damn whether Carolina won it yesterday or not. They're frauds. That team is a big, stinking fraud team. And so I'm actually starting to think, yeah, the New Orleans Saints might be a team that we have to now sit up straight and say, hey, they're playoff bound, because it certainly doesn't appear at this particular moment that the Atlanta Falcons can be thinking too much any longer about repeating. And while the New Orleans Saints are certainly, they've got their share of warts, it would seem to me that they have certainly been bolstered by the addition of their running back, rookie Kamara, who would appear, I certainly would say, is probably carrying that team and carrying a lot more of it than anybody's even anticipating or even giving credit for at this point. Philadelphia Eagles, 7-1 now, continue to be the best team by record in the entire NFL. And the talk continues, and that talk being, yeah, this team's going to an NFC championship. Yeah, this team might just end up going to the Super Bowl. I would say that at 7-1, it would certainly seem, and two up in the loss column, it would certainly seem that the Eagles certainly are putting a bow, it would appear, on certainly being playoff bound for sure, and perhaps maybe even NFC East winners. So I guess the next question would be, if we take a look at the Eagles' schedule, where's the next loss? Perhaps maybe we'll take a look at the Eagles' schedule and see if we can predict where they might lose again or when it might be. I don't know. I don't like usually playing those kinds of games, but anybody notice what the Seattle Seahawks did yesterday? Holy smokes. This is a Seattle Seahawks team that has had, in my opinion, a little bit of difficulty putting points up. But they went into a shootout with the Houston Texans yesterday, swapped 79 points in what I would have to call the anomaly game of the week. Anomaly, why? Who saw 79 points coming from either one of these teams between the two of them? I'm just checking right now to see what was the over-under on that game. How about 46 and not even the biggest one on the board? But I would suspect in the end it certainly probably won the award for the biggest over-under at 79 points. What about the Seattle Seahawks? Are they a fraud team? Not sure. And then last but not least, declared dead just a couple of weeks ago, the Steelers now appear to be in solid control of the AFC North. After they took care of the Detroit Lions yesterday. And I suppose that's the end of the Detroit Lions now again for this season, as they have dropped now to 3-4. And it just blows me away that just a few short weeks ago, we were all sitting around going, oh boy, this Detroit Lions team might just be the best in this division. And there we go one more time again. All right, anyhow, there's just a few of the teams and games we will touch on here this evening. We will certainly have to touch on the Oakland Raiders as well, because I think you would have to put the Oakland Raiders kind of in the same category as with the Detroit Lions. But there's just a handful of things that we can talk about that we will talk about here this evening. And if, whatever is on your mind with regard to anything that went on on the field in the NFL with your team, whether I mentioned it or not, please don't hesitate to give us a call if you want to weigh in. 347-826-9964 is how you can get a hold of us here at Frat House Sports. 347-826-9964. Otherwise, feel free to leave us a message in our Blog Talk Radio chat room, or you can catch me over on Twitter at Frat House Mike. That's how you can get me on Twitter, at Frat House Mike. Leave me a message over there. I'd be more than happy to converse with you that way or bring your comments to the airwaves via that media. All right, let me get my co-host in here for this evening. Brandon, it's midpoint of the season at this point. I kind of said it, I think, a little bit last week. There are some things that you look at the division standings and you kind of say, yeah, that's one I expected. But when you look at other ones, you sit there, kind of scratch your head at a few things. Before we get into taking a look at everything midpoint, we do have one game this evening, and that's the Denver Broncos at the Kansas City Chiefs. Kansas City Chiefs go into this game as a 7.5-point favorite against the Broncos. Is that line a little out of whack? Sure sounds that way to me.
Yeah, it might be a little high, you know. The game is in Kansas City, though, so if you get the three, for take the three away, it'd be, you know, 4.5 at a neutral site, and then the Chiefs would be 1.5 in Denver. That's probably about right. It just seems excessive, you know, when you look at it from, you know, them being at home. I mean, I don't really see it. I don't think, you know, Denver has not been putting up a lot of points the last few weeks. Their offense has been struggling. The Chiefs have a solid defense, so there's nothing to make you think they're going to fix their offensive woes this week. I'm kind of thinking it should be a relatively, I'm not going to say easy because it's a division game, but I think that the Chiefs should win this without a lot of questions. I mean, if you just look at recent weeks, you know, the Chiefs have been solid. They barely lost to the Raiders last week. You know, it seems like nobody wants to step up and be dominant in the West. I mean, for a while, it started out looking like all three of them were going to be fighting for it. Now they're just barely, you know, they're trading punches back and forth. So, you know, I think if the Chiefs can win this, it does finally give them a bit of a leg up in the division. I mean, they're already ahead, you know, sort of ahead. They haven't had their bye, and the Broncos have. So it'll be interesting how this week goes. But, the Chiefs win, they're 6-2, and that'll give them 2 in the loss column. So,
yeah, no chance you see that Denver would necessarily pull this one off. You're talking about their lack of offensive ability recently.
I would love for them to find a running game with C.J. Williams or C.J. Anderson for my fantasy team tonight. But I, you know, unless some miracle happens, I just don't see it. I mean, you know, they say any given Sunday or Monday, you know, that, you know, any team can win. It just, if you look at the recent trends, the Chiefs have been scoring a lot. Their defense is pretty good most times throughout the year. They had a little letdown last week against the Raiders, but, you know, the Broncos haven't put up anything of note. I mean, they were shut out last week, so, you know, you can never count anybody out. In the league anymore, I guess, but it certainly doesn't look good and promising. You know,
yeah, not this year. Not
or
this
an
year
upset
anyhow,
in
sure.
Kansas
yeah.
City. In Kansas City, mm-hmm. too. I mean, Kansas City is one of the tougher places, you know, to play. I mean, you know, we touched on that Seattle game, and, you know, Seattle almost lost to Houston at what a lot of people say is the hardest place to play. But I would almost make it that Kansas City can be even a little more intimidating. They both make a lot of noise, you know, but Kansas City, man, all you see is red. You know, the whole stadium, you know, seems like they all wear red every game. And I don't know. It just seems to me, it seems more intimidating. I would as a player, I would think, you know, than others. Maybe it's just a perception of my own, but, you know, as loud as that stadium is, you know, that's a tough place to go in and play. Not to say, there are a lot of teams that, a lot of teams have a good home field advantage. The Broncos are one of them. They play in that Mile High air, which, they practice in all the time. And, it does give them a nice little home advantage when they're at home. But, I think this is just too big of a hurdle to overcome with the way they've been playing recently.
You bring up their lack of the Broncos' lack of offensive output recently. I'm just noticing in the AFC, they have the second lowest points for, second lowest in the entire conference, AFC. Just a bit over 100 points so far through six games played. At the same time, they have the third lowest points against. So this team is all defense. That's what that points out, and that's something that we know. Which I think, at home, if Denver were at home, that can benefit them. As you point out, on the road in Kansas City, going to be a tough one. I still think, nonetheless, I think the line is a little bit high in favor of Kansas City. But
listen. Okay, what would you think the line would be if it was reversed, if they were playing in Denver? Does Kansas City being a 1.5-point favorite seem high to you there in that scenario in Denver?
Would Kansas City being a 1.5-point favorite, is that what your question was?
Yes, in Denver. Would you think that was a high line?
No.
Well, then it's the same deal because it's 3 points. You got a 3-point swing for being at home or being on a road. So, it's 6 points different, 7.5. It's the same line, essentially. It does seem high, but, I honestly don't see the Chiefs having a hard time winning this game by 10 points or more. If I was playing the line, I'd be all over the Chiefs side for sure. Now, it might not be one that stood out to me on, looking at the, a field, the whole weekly field, but, individually, yeah, definitely. If I was picking this game with the line, I would definitely take the Chiefs. I just don't see how the Broncos, the Chiefs have too many weapons. They're going to put points up.
All right, well, we will see how it
Yeah, watch
it plays
the Broncos
out.
Win like 35-10 or something stupid.
No. But
that's the
I'm
way the season's
this.
Been going, though. You got to say this season is – that's the way this
I
year's
will
gone.
Say, I will say this. Not this week, though, Brandon, because one of the things that I have been keeping track of as people who listen to this program would know, who regularly listen would know recently anyhow, every single one of the favorites won this week with the exception of Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay was the only one that did not win that was favored. All other favorites, all of them won. So where we were seeing a trend a number of weeks ago, where it seemed like all the favorites were losing, that trend has swung back. Now, as you and I both kind of, I think, figured out was going to happen, things have kind of settled down now a little bit. Up until about week 5, week 6, things can be in a little state of flux, but then by about week 6, you start to, and this has been generally the trend that I can gather from one season to the next, things start to settle down a bit more. And so, very interestingly, that was the only one that did not win. So Kansas City is favored tonight. The trend would say, based on everything that has gone down this weekend specifically, one would say that trend should continue. Kansas City will win as well. Carolina was the only one that didn't. The Vikings won. They were favored. They were favored by almost 10, and they did that without any difficulty. They beat the Cleveland Browns 33-16. Case Keenum, 27 of 43, 288 yards, two touchdowns, an interception, 88.1 passer rating. Jerick McKinnon had a very, very good day. 50 yards on the ground, another 72 yards in the air, and a rushing touchdown as well. That must have helped out your fantasy team a little bit.
I need a lot more, though, from CJ.
You need a lot more? Okay.
Just saying.
Adam Thielen had a tremendous day. Five receptions, 98 yards, a touchdown. Gosh, I was hearing Kyle Rudolph's name being mentioned. We hadn't heard from Kyle Rudolph. It felt like all season, actually. Six receptions for 27 yards and a touchdown. What do you make of the Minnesota Vikings? Because I've got to be honest with you, I'm not 100% certain. This is a division-leading team. When you take a look at the division, this might be one of those kind of default sort of situations as Green Bay continues to kind of fall backward. We don't know where they're going to go coming out of their bye next week just yet, but we talked about that a little bit last week. Perhaps, you know, their bye coming up when it did is a good thing for the Green Bay Packers, a good thing maybe for Brett Hundley. They're kind of a question mark sitting out there. I don't think there's any question mark any longer about the Detroit Lions after their loss yesterday. So this might be one of those situations where the Minnesota Vikings default win the division, right?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, it's circumstance, you know, because the Brett Favre injury, you know. But they're still playing well. They've had quarterback issues, but they've not let it become an issue. So, you know, what do you – there's nothing you can say except for, you know – you know, they're giving it their all. So, you know, they're doing well. They're not, you know what I mean? They're not letting it stop them. You know, the fact that they haven't had a, you know, that they're playing most of their games with Case Keenum and they don't really have a true idea yet who's going to be their quarterback. Let's just say in another 3 or 4 weeks, you know, we have option A, option B and option C, yet they still keep winning games. So, you know, that's good. I don't know. See, I think that's where the, you know, the playoffs will hit. And I think that's might slow them down a little bit. I would just personally worry that, you know, lack of having a true quote unquote leader, you know, I don't even know, honestly, what would be the best option, you know, for them in quarterback. Would it be a Teddy Bridgewater? Would it be a Sam Bradford? You know, Teddy Bridgewater was just starting to get, you know, his feet wet essentially when he got hurt, you know. So it's, you know, it could go, it's one of those that could go either way kind of thing. So, you know, I don't know what the best answer there is.
The Vikings, do you see them as you would and as you described, like whoever the team is that comes out of the AFC South as a team that yeah, they'll make the playoffs, but they're probably going to be a one and done?
Probably. It just depends who they end up playing, you know, because I'm not loving whoever comes out of the South either.
Yeah,
you know,
I know
what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, if you get the South against the North, let's just say the Eagles end up with the best record. They get the wild card winner by default. That means the South and the North have to play. One of them's got to win. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's just, it just depends how it goes, you know, how the seeding falls. Let's put it that way. I mean, the Eagles will probably have a bye the first week, so that would be out of the equation. But
if we were to extrapolate this all the way out,
right.
The Eagles would get a bye, so they wouldn't play until the next round. So, you know, yeah, but you're right. I mean, I don't like what I see coming out of the NFC South either, and yet at the same time, I just can't put my finger on whether this. See, I suppose maybe what I'm trying to do in the NFC is figure out where the real strength and competition is, and I got to be honest with you, Brendan. I don't know if I can identify it. Maybe the Rams. I'm not sure because I'm not sure about them yet either. And if I dismiss the New Orleans Saints, because I definitely think that that might end up being another one of those default winners of a division. So if I dismiss them, where's the real strength in this NFC conference without, aside from, say, the Philadelphia Eagles?
Maybe the Rams. That's hard to
say. I know.
I don't know. You know, I don't know where you go. That's my point. I think it's the Eagles and then everybody else. You know, and even the Eagles' remaining schedule, you had talked about maybe looking at the rest of their schedule. Their rest of their schedule might actually help clear up a bit of that, because they have to play, you know, the Seahawks yet. And they have to play the Rams, because the NFC East played the NFC West this year. So, you know, there's two things, you know, that might, you know, kind of help clear the water a little, you know. I mean, if the Eagles go, you know, 2-0 against Seattle and LA, okay. One of them two is probably going to win a division, and, you know, the Eagles could have wins over them. So,
okay, well, let's, all right. So for the sake of our conversation here for a moment, let's look at that for a minute. The Philadelphia Eagles schedule as it stands right now, they play the Denver Broncos this coming week at home. This will be – the Eagles are at home. This will be the Eagles' third straight game at home. They are right now – and now, mind you, the Denver Broncos have not played yet this evening. But for at this moment right now, the Philadelphia Eagles are an early – Brandon, 7-point favorite to beat the Broncos at home and go 8-1. All right? So we've got the Broncos at home. All right. So there's your that's game nine. The Eagles then go on a bye. So bye in week 10. Now, when they come back from the bye, and if we look at that second half of the schedule, that's where it starts to get interesting, because coming back from the bye, November 19th, they go on the road to play the Cowboys. All right. Come home to play the Bears. And then go on a West Coast swing for three games. They're going to play the Seahawks, then the Rams. They come back east, and they're on the road at the Giants. All right? And then they're home for the remaining two games of the season against the Raiders and then the Cowboys on New Year's Eve. Those two games back-to-back on the east, on the West Coast, that might be an advantage. Doug Peterson has already said the team will not come back east. When they go out to play the Seahawks, they will stay out west to play the Rams then the following Sunday, which I think is a very smart move.
Yep, absolutely.
So, let's assume for a moment the Eagles go into the bye week at what? 8-1. 8-1. They beat the Broncos. Let's just say that. Where do they get their, you know, how many losses are we looking at for this
season? Well, I think it's safe to say they'll probably drop one to
the Cowboys.
You know, one of the two the Cowboys, but maybe not. It depends on the outcome of the Ezekiel Elliott thing. Although, you know, maybe they won't miss a beat. You know, who knows? That's not so much what, you know, would scare me would be the back-to-back West Coast games. I do like the fact that they're staying out there, but, you know, they got to go to Seattle, which we've already talked about being a tough place to play. And then the Rams, who seem to be, you know, I don't know what they seem to be. They seem to be a bit of a powerhouse. So, you know, at this point, I think you got to give them credit, and you got to give the Eagles, you know, I've given the Eagles plenty of credit, and I could see them not losing another game, really. But they, you know, you got to think if that at Seattle game, because that's the first one of the West Coast games. It's a Sunday night game, which actually makes it almost like an 11:35 start if you're on East Coast time. So that's getting pretty late. You know what I mean? I mean, your body doesn't switch over, you know, that 3-hour time zone difference very quickly. So, you know, that's probably a vulnerable point. Now, I think they're in better shape against the Rams because they're going to, especially if they stay out there, you know. So, you know, all that being said, you know, I think maybe one of those, maybe that Seattle game and maybe one of the Dallas games. Other than that, the rest of the Eagles schedule, I don't see many places. I mean, Denver's coming to Philadelphia next week. If that was reversed, maybe I'd worry about that. Chicago doesn't scare me for the Eagles. The Giants, no. The Giants are done. You know, so maybe Oakland, but, you know, at that point, Oakland could be out of it. You know,
yep.
The way the West is
Oakland
going.
Oakland might be out of it now.
Well, I mean, but not, I mean they may be mathematically out of it. I know, but they may be mathematically out of it by the second to last week is my point. Like Kansas City may have that division wrapped up and they may not be in the, and you know, how excited are they going to be? You know, it's listed as a Monday night game. So I'm assuming that'll stay. So, cause it's on ESPN. So that'll probably, that won't get flexed. So, you know, how excited are the Raiders going to be at that point to come East and play them? And the Eagles may need that for seeding, depending on the way the rest of the rest of it goes. It's not very likely at this point, considering how far out in front they kind of are already. But
at this moment,
I mean,
right.
Minnesota, I don't know, Minnesota's 6-2, but they're not a strong 6-2 with their quarterback situation. So, you know, maybe they're Seattle, maybe they only have 2 losses. The Rams only have 2 losses. If one of those two, you know, come out of there, a clear cut winner, maybe. But, you know,
assume, let's just say for the sake of argument, that the number one, that the Eagles beat the Broncos this coming week and take their record to 9-1. Now, coming back, so that's the first assumption we make. Second assumption, let's assume for sake of argument that the Eagles of their remaining 7 games, of their remaining 7 games after the bye, let's just say they drop one against the Cowboys. And let's say they drop both of those games on the West Coast, Brandon, the Seahawks and the Rams. That still puts the Eagles at 12-4.
Yeah,
I mean,
I don't see that. I don't see them dropping both.
That's not 12-4 is tremendous. That's a tremendous.
I think
and maybe enough to get them the number one seed. Maybe 12-4 might be enough to get them the number one seed in the NFC.
Should be. Well, so, maybe.
You know,
you have to see how the rest play out.
The interesting thing when you look at this Eagles schedule is that there are a number of games on here that at the beginning of the season, when we don't have the knowledge that we do now, when the team wasn't 7-1, when the team was just coming in and all we knew was, hey, we're entering the year with a second-year quarterback at a second-year head coach, and there's a lot of question marks about what this team is, okay? If you went and took a look at this schedule back then, you would look at it and go, Broncos, probably a loss, at least definitely one loss to the Cowboys, at least definitely one loss to the Giants, probably one loss to the Redskins. You're losing to Seattle. You're losing to the Raiders, all right? There's 6 losses right there, okay? So without any difficulty whatsoever, you could have come up with 6 losses right there. We're having trouble coming up with 4.
Yep.
Oh, man alive. What a strange, strange world we live in right here with the NFL this season. Honest to God, I really don't. I mean, seriously, this is just. Anyhow, all right, so. What we determined from this little exercise is, as you just pointed out, I think you said it the best, there's the Philadelphia Eagles and there's everyone else. That's basically what we've come up with. Because you and I are both kind of in agreement. You could talk about the Seattle Seahawks. You could talk about the Rams if you want. You could talk about the Minnesota Vikings, maybe. But the bottom line is, I'm really in the NFC. I'm not really afraid of any of the teams that I'm that's in this conference. I'm not afraid of any of them.
I agree with you. I think the Eagles are. I think the Eagles are the only team in the NFL. I don't think there's a clear cut choice in the AFC right now. I mean, the Chiefs are kind of looking okay. The Patriots are looking okay. Pittsburgh looks a little better, but I mean, you can put the Chiefs, the Patriots, and the Steelers all in a bag and shake it up, and any one of the three could fall out. You know what I mean? I don't see that as being as clear as, you know, okay, the Eagles are by far and away the number one contender, number one seed, rather, in the NFC. I don't see a clear-cut and AFC number one seed emerge just yet. I mean, the Patriots and the Steelers are both 6-2, and the Chiefs are 5-2 pending tonight. They win tonight, they're 6-2. I mean, and the Chiefs beat the Patriots head-to-head. You know, so, you know, do you have a clear cut? Maybe that you can call it the Chiefs. I don't know.
Pittsburgh's on an upswing,
but I think it's clear cut right now. Midseason, you got to say the Eagles are in the driver's seat for number one seed in the NFC, and really, there's nobody else close. You know what I'm see my point? In other words, like they're far and away right now. I mean, hey, an injury next week could change that. I'm not wishing it on them. Obviously, I'm rooting for them too. I'd like to see the Eagles go. I think Carson Wentz and what they're doing is phenomenal. I still don't think their head coach is all that, but whatever. You know, they're going to win despite him, apparently.
Yeah,
the AFC doesn't have a clear cut number one guy sticking out just yet.
Mm-hmm.
It could change. Interesting.
Both conferences are kind of similar in that respect, with the exception of, as you're pointing out, the Philadelphia Eagles, as much as I'm having difficulty wrapping my brain around it, and that's really been my problem all along with the whole thing. My biggest problem with the Philadelphia Eagles is trying to wrap my brain around it. That's my problem. I can't wrap my brain around it.
I can actually make the AFC even more confusing. Let's just assume Kansas City wins tonight. You'll have three teams that are 6-2. The Chiefs have beaten the Patriots. The Steelers have beaten the Chiefs. And coming up in week 15, New England goes to Pittsburgh. So let's see how this triangle all plays itself out. You could have, you know, all three of them, you know, all having distinct legs up based on the wins.
Yeah.
So, I mean, by that math, do you give Pittsburgh the nod over the Chiefs and the Chiefs the nod over the Patriots for now? So that would be Pittsburgh, Kansas City, then New England if you're going to go by head-to-head wins. Now, obviously, you're not – I don't believe – no, that would be it. They all played each other head-to-head, yeah. Pittsburgh's right. Going to play New England yet. So, yeah, they will all have played head-to-head.
If you use what we love to refer to here as the eye test, to me – boy, I was just going to say, to me, the eye test has to go to – the Chiefs, and yet when you look at the roster on paper of the Pittsburgh Steelers, it might be the Steelers. I'm not sure. I mean, mm-hmm. The Steelers certainly would appear roster-wise on paper to have perhaps maybe the best team when you throw in, you know, Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, of course, at the top of the heap. But then they've got, you know, you throw in a couple others there that you've got.
Well.
That certainly are contributors as well. But
you look at recent weeks, the Patriots are on a 4-game win streak. The Steelers are on a 3-game win streak, and the Chiefs are on a 2-game losing streak. So, mm-hmm. You know, does that maybe weigh into it? I mean, because we all know we've seen this year after year. At the end of the season, a team with a lot of momentum can go far in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
So, you don't want to be peaking just yet. And I don't think any of these three teams necessarily are peaking. Maybe the Chiefs may have peaked the first couple of weeks because they were just killing people out of the gate. I don't know if that was considered a peak or not. Let's see if they can get some momentum back. And the Patriots defense was absolutely dreadful the first 4 weeks, but the next couple, it's been better. So, you know, they might be. And Pittsburgh's had many different issues, you know, not necessarily on the field per
right.
se, you know, pregame and locker room divide and fingers being pointing and players, you know, doubting themselves and coaches pointing at players and players pointing at coaches.
Got an issue right now with Martavis Bryant, right?
Right, yeah, that's a distraction. Well, that's
yep.
Is that a distraction? It's the third string receiver. I mean, come on, shut up.
But
I wouldn't be surprised if they ship him out. They might just ship him out.
If he's so valuable to you,
he's so valuable that you make him inactive. I don't think that's generally a ticket to being out of town.
No, and you're right, but Brandon, for a third string receiver, can you remember a guy that's gotten more ink over the whole situation and being a third string receiver? I mean, for God's sake, you would think you're talking about a number one guy here. I hear you. I agree with you. It shouldn't be getting as much play as it is, but it is. You're talking about, coming on, peaking at the right time in the season. And yeah, we've heard this sort of thing for years and years and years from different analysts. You know, hey, you would prefer to have a team coming on strong at the end of a season as opposed to at the very beginning of the season. Very interestingly, Ron Jaworski just today, in talking about the Philadelphia Eagles, expressed just a tad bit of concern about the fact that that very thing, is this team right now peaking too soon? Difficult to say. I mean, we won't know. It'll be easier, of course, to make that judgment, I suppose, after the fact, particularly if something goes wrong, seriously wrong. But they seem to be a little bit different, don't they? I mean, there's a self-confidence about this team, but not a we're unbeatable sense to this team, isn't there? I mean, don't you get that? I kind of get that feel from them, that they're all being very level-headed about it, despite the fact there's probably no one, perhaps maybe with the exception of Brent Celek, who has been in this position before.
Yeah, I think they're doing a good job of it, I think. I think Carson Wentz, to me, exudes confidence. I think he comes off to me as being very confident that he's just ready for the next challenge. I don't see him, I don't see any part of his game right now that's lacking. One thing that does scare, he does tend to run a little much, which scares me, but, he does seem to do a pretty good job of protecting himself too. So, I like the way the Eagles are carrying themselves. They're not being too loud in the press. They're not,
right.
They're not strutting too hard, but yet they're
right.
They're going out there every week and taking care of business. So I think
since
that's the way to do.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. It makes me a little bit nervous, I suppose. Maybe I'll tell you what really made me nervous yesterday, and it was one of the things we talked about a little bit last week. Losing Jason Peters is going to be a big issue for this Philadelphia Eagles team when it comes to protecting Carson Wentz. And son of a gun, if we didn't see so many of the issues with the line yesterday from the left side, that's where we were seeing it come. And that was all as a result of our buddy Vitae over there and not being able to hold his end of the bargain up. Since we are talking about the Philadelphia Eagles yesterday, beat the San Francisco 49ers. Yes, this is the winless San Francisco 49ers, 0-8, 33-10. They beat them. I'm just looking over the box score here right now, really, for the first time. I looked at it a little bit during the course of the game yesterday, but this is the exact, completed box score. Carson Wentz, 18 of 32. Okay, I mean, it's not, you know, your eyes aren't bugging out of your head. 18 of 32, 211 yards, two touchdowns, one interception, 84.2 passer rating. I'm just looking at the ground game. You had 54 yards from Corey Clement. You had 48 yards from LeGarrette Blount. I don't know what the deal was yesterday with Smallwood. He only had one carry. I don't know if he's still dealing with perhaps maybe they held him out a little bit because he's still perhaps maybe dealing with that injury he suffered a couple of weeks ago. Alshon Jeffrey, two receptions, 62 yards. So when it comes right down to it, they did just enough. The Eagles did have a defensive touchdown. Defense played very, very – boy, they were swarming, weren't they? Just swarming over C.J. Beathard. Four sacks on him, on C.J. Beathard. And like I said, there was a defensive touchdown. How many times did they hit? 12 hits. They put 12 hits on the quarterback. Holy smokes! So it was a good game, not an eye popping game for Carson Wentz. Does worry me a little bit, as you point out, the mobility. I'd worry about him getting injured, because if this quarterback gets injured, I would think you're looking at the whole thing going right down the proverbial tubes. That would be my suspicion. I don't know if Nick Foles could hold it together, but isn't that the way just about with any team, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. That's just about, you know, that's the Green Bay Packers. That's, you know,
yep.
New England, they'd be done without Brady
more than likely.
Garoppolo.
Maybe. You can't say that. You can't say that.
Yeah, I can.
You might be the only team that can get away with not saying that. I mean, your team didn't have him for four games at the beginning of the season last year. Hey, with the exception of one game, it didn't hurt you one bit.
Well, Garoppolo only played a game and a half, if you remember. Jacoby Brissett played the other game and a half, or the other two and a half. So I don't know that Garoppolo's all that. You know, he got a little dinged up there. And so I don't have all the faith in the world of Garoppolo, I'll be honest with you. And I honestly don't. I don't think if you look at this past league year, the league. I mean, you got guys like Jay Cutler getting jobs again. There's so many teams that have a deficiency. You can't tell me. And I knew it was common knowledge that Garoppolo could have been had in a trade.
Yep.
I can't imagine a team who needed a quarterback. You know, if they really, really wanted. And thought Garoppolo was all that. They I'm sure they'd have gave up a number one or a two or a one and a three or whatever they were asking for to get the job done, and yet nobody was willing to do it. So what does that let you know? That maybe not the rest of the league thinks, you know, or they say, I'll wait a year and I'll get him as an unrestricted free agent. I'll just pay him versus giving up my draft picks.
I think that's more the case, don't you, though?
Maybe. Whatever the case is, I'll be honest
with you.
As a New England Patriots fan, I would rather have Tom Brady for another year or two than break the bank and keep Garoppolo. I don't think Garoppolo's all that. So we'll see. History will be written in the years to come. But I just don't think Jimmy Garoppolo's all that. And we'll find out if he's, you know, given a shot somewhere else. Somebody pays him or somehow works out a deal and stays in New England. I don't know, but we'll see. If it was me and Tom Brady was healthy and still had another year or two in him, I'd rather have another year or two with a Hall of Famer versus Jimmy Garoppolo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I might agree with
opinion.
You. I might agree with you, but you know, you and I have talked about this very scenario.
Well, let's put it this way. If everything you hear and read is true and they were indeed shopping him, and Brady, you know, feels good for another couple of years. 1 + 1 would have equaled Jimmy Garoppolo got traded preseason, and that didn't happen. So that tells me that the market just wasn't there for him, or somebody's lying somewhere and Brady will be done at the end of this year and Garoppolo will be re-signed as the starter. Of those two scenarios, I think the first one's more likely because Tom Brady has not shown any fall off in his play this year. He's still way up there in stats. They're winning games. You know, they may not be as dominant as they once were, but they're also, you know, they're missing a few pieces here and there. Julian Edelman being out really hurts this offense more than people know. I think Cooks is helping. You know, the other guy they brought in has been basically invisible that they brought in preseason from the Colts. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. He wears number 13. He's been essentially invisible. It's been Hogan. It's been Cooks. It's been, you know, Edelman. It's been Gronk. It's been, you know, that's what it's been. It's been, I think his name's Foster. He's been, like, invisible. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is as far as, you know, what's going to be the long-term plan. But, you know, that's just my opinion. I think there's a lot of teams out there that, you know, like we started talking this off with Eagles and Wentz, and if they lost Wentz, they'd be in trouble. I think that would be the scenario for about 70-80% of the teams out there. The Vikings, however, seem to be doing okay. They are managing with Case Keenum. So, you know, it can be done. I don't know, you know, if I'm a Vikings fan, who am I rooting for right now? Am I rooting for Bradford to get healthy? Am I rooting for Bridgewater to be ready to go? You know, or am I rooting for Case Keenum to just stay where he is and keep managing the game like the good little soldier he's doing? I mean, if you were a Viking, where would you want to go? Because you put Bradford comes back and he's healthy and he comes in, plays really great for a game. Next game, he could be out just as quick. He is one of the most injury prone quarterbacks there are. I feel bad for the guy. You know, he tries. He clearly is a solid player. I mean, you may not know how good he is because he never stays healthy enough to get a good body of work out of him. You know, it's just unfortunate. Well, I'm just stating it as it is.
Well, it's the truth. It's the truth. And
Bridgewater looked like he was on pace to be, you know, to bring this team to the next level. And then he had a horrible injury where they were saying he might not even walk right again. And now he's, you know, practicing again at least. So we'll see, you know, where that goes.
You're bringing up my very point about Minnesota. And that is by bringing up that you know, conundrum that you've just presented there, you're bringing up in a roundabout way exactly what the issue is, Minnesota. What the hell are they? What are they? You know, that's my big problem with trying to determine whether, in fact, Minnesota has any real NFC competitive power rank, for want of a better phrase. Do they have any real power rank with the NFC? I don't know. I don't know whether they do or not. I really don't. Philip Dorsett is who you're thinking of, who you got from
yes.
the Colts.
Yes.
With regard to Garoppolo and the New England Patriots, here's how I foresee that conversations may have gone in the offseason. Somebody's calling up and Belichick is saying, yeah, you can have him. He's worth a one. And they're going, well, we're not giving you a one. Now, the reason they're saying we're not giving you a one is not because they don't think he's not worth a one. It's because they're going, why the hell should I give up a one, as you point out, when I can get him next year, you know, as a free agent?
They're going to have to give something up. The Patriots will put a tag on him that they will get some kind of compensation. It's not going to be a franchise tag, but they will have to put something. They will get something for him. He's not going to be going scot-free, I believe. I think they're going to have – they'll have a way that, you know, some kind of restricted tender. They may not get anywhere near what they would have gotten, but – They'll get something. They'll get nothing else. Nothing. If nothing else, they'll get a compensation pick. You know, a three. You know, they'll get a three, because that's the highest you can get as a compensation pick. And for that player, that would probably be correct.
Okay. Now, assuming your logic is correct, that, you know, the Patriots, like you do, don't necessarily see a long-term future with Garoppolo, but they'll find a way to make him marketable and move him to another team that is in need of a quarterback. You would have to assume that they're going to be seriously, seriously looking at this year's market to draft a quarterback, right?
Probably. Yeah, I would think so. I think they were looking at every year. I mean, they brought Brissett in 2 years ago, and they traded him. I think the Patriots, I don't know that they were happy with any of their options for the Brady replacement just yet. You know, if you follow the logic of what you've seen from the Patriots, we've seen Josh McDaniels' name come up repeatedly as a possible head coach somewhere else, yet he keeps staying in New England being the OC. You know, so it makes you think there's a deal in place for him to succeed Belichick when that time comes. You got to think he's going to want to be involved with drafting his quarterback of the future. And Garoppolo was there before he came back. Garoppolo was not a Josh McDaniel pick. So to me, that makes more sense that Garoppolo's not the long-term guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be somebody drafted under the tenure of McDaniel, which Brissett would have been, but they traded him. So maybe they thought they saw what they needed to see. I don't know. He seemed okay in Indianapolis. I don't think it's a fair test because that team is such dreck. I mean, their starting franchise quarterback won't even come back because of how bad the team is, essentially. You know, if you keep reading, he's had a setback and he may not play the rest of the year now.
You know? Right.
Andrew Luck is going to next year. As a matter of fact, I believe, because I don't know if they ever had him on the physically unable to perform list or not.
So they did not.
Okay, then they don't have a clock on him. But sooner or later, they're going to he's been taking up a roster spot all year then. So sooner or later, they're gonna get tired of that. And they're going to put him on IR. If it's not looking like he's gonna get there anytime soon, then, you know, I got to think, you know, Brissett's going to get the reins for the rest of the year at some point.
Right. Right. Well, I don't know what to say about the Colts, except we've been talking about, I've been saying, you know, on the Frat House Sports Show, it feels like, I'm going to be honest with you, Brady, it feels like for 6 years. I feel like for 6 years I've been saying on the Frat House Sports Show that the makeup of the team is just not right. And every year it's one new issue after another with the Indianapolis Colts. They haven't been right since Peyton Manning left. I mean, that's the bottom line. I think you could go back to that. You can mark it in time. Mark it in time. That's when the demise of the Colts began. Was right there. At least when he went down with his injury. But I don't know what to. I don't know what to make of the whole Andrew Luck situation. I really don't.
I don't think anybody does. I don't think the Colts even maybe not be 100% sure.
It's annoying in many respects. I mean, I'm an outsider looking in. I'm not a Colts fan, but it's annoying to me because I'm going to be honest with you. I come away from it with a very bad taste in my mouth initially and immediately about Andrew Luck. That's who I come away with a bad taste in my mouth about. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But I think Andrew Luck needs to recognize that I think if I feel that way, there are a lot of other people out there that feel that way as well. And that's the impression that is being given through this whole situation. Whatever is going on, that's the impression that's being given. He needs to be aware of that because I think that's lowering his market value. Just my personal opinion.
I'm not sure what his contract status is, but I thought I remember he signed re-sign with them.
He's got numerous years. He's got to. I'm almost positive.
Yeah, so he's not hurting his – you know what? He's either going
to
have to
he might
to
not be. He might
traded.
Not be. Yeah.
And if he's traded – it will be on that contract. So he already knows what he's getting paid. See my point? In other words, he's not going to have to redo, especially if he has several years left. It's probably a relatively new deal, so the cap hits are going to be what they are, and he probably won't be able to redo a deal for a while, at least for a year or two.
This was June of 2016. June of 2016, so a year ago this past summer. Greg Rosenthal, NFL.com. Andrew Luck signed 6-year, $140 million Colts contract. 6 years,
yep.
$140 million. So that would have been, I think that was 6 years starting this year. Starting this year, I believe.
Yep.
So because it was an extension. It didn't include 2016. It was for starting in 2017. So 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. It carries them through 22. So contract's good through 2022.
No, so he's not worried. He knows what he's making if he gets traded.
No. Okay, he
my
may
question
not have
is,
to worry.
How many people are going to want him?
That's my point. See, and that's the other part of the marketing aspect of what I'm talking about. Yeah, you can sit there and say, I know what I'm going to get paid, but you're disenfranchising a load of teams out there that might want to take a chance on him, that might reach out and say, hey, yeah, let's get Andrew Luck over here. But now they're looking at all this, and like me, they're looking at it and going, oh, I don't know. Do I want this guy? This guy's a bit of flake, isn't he? I mean, you know, he plays when he wants, whines when he wants. I mean, really.
If you believe what you read, you know, he had that shoulder operation in the offseason, and he had a setback when he started practicing. So if you're going to take that at face value, you know, you got to look at this year as being, you know, okay, he's dealing with an injury. How good is that shoulder moving forward? I think that might be a better question than, you know, whether he plays when he wants or not. You know what I'm saying? In other words, like, is he going to be durable long term?
Mm-hmm.
Is this shoulder going to keep becoming a problem? Is he going to become like, you know, and the next Bradford or somebody who every time you look at him, he's on injured reserve?
Right,
or he's
right,
got
right.
a different issue. You know, I don't know. I think if I was a general manager making up my team, I think I'd be more worried about something like that, because if you are going to trade for him, you are, you know, absorbing that $140 million contract, obviously some of which the Colts have already paid, but, you know, there's going to be a burden, at least a cap burden for sure on your team.
Yep.
I'm sure there's a lot of money involved as well. So, you know, you got to be prepared if he's the guy, you know, you got to have that, you know, you got to be fully aware of that,
mm-hmm.
I guess is what I'm getting at.
Speaking of shoulders, did you happen to hear the extent of the result and surgery for Aaron Rodgers?
No, I did not. Not that
how
I knew
about,
he had surgery.
Yeah. How about 13 screws? Currently
oh my God.
In his shoulder. Team.
In the collarbone.
Yes, and a big old metal plate.
Wow, I only have 8 with my
yep.
metal plate, so yeah, he's got me beat by 5. That's
13.
A big one.
13, yep. Oh, boy. Talk about, I mean, you know, coming back from that, wow.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I don't think you're going to see him the rest of the year, honestly. Just
well,
based
no,
on...
I don't think the rest of the year. You know, you're talking
well,
about...
he is eligible. He would be eligible to come back after 8 weeks.
No, I understand.
So
I understand,
he could,
but you're
in
talking
theory,
about...
come back for the playoffs.
Being able
if they
to come,
it.
Just generally coming back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wow.
Well, he'll probably... What'll probably happen is the collarbone will heal, and they'll probably have another surgery to remove it because of what he does. I don't think they, you know, I doubt they'd leave the plate in his case because he's an athlete. They'd want that out. So they'll probably take it out.
Okay.
And that'll probably happen off season. And that's a relatively minor, you know, the incision has to heal, that kind of thing. That's not
mm-hmm.
the same kind of deal. And the bone, you know, the screws are so small, you know, the bone will fill in relatively quickly after they remove the plate.
Gotcha. All right.
I don't know. That would just be my guess. I can speak from a little experience because I have a plate in my right shoulder, and I can actually, depending on, you know, how I move and what the weather is, I can still feel it in there. So it's not like, you know, if you're throwing the football with your shoulder, I would think that would be a big irritant. So I got to think, you know, and I follow, you know, a lot of, you know, different professional motorcycle racers who've had very similar injuries, and 90% of them go back and get the plate out, you know, because it's just, you know, a limit, you know, it limits what they can do. For me, I'm not a professional athlete. It's irrelevant if I have, you know, a plate in my shoulder. You know what I mean? It's not like
weird.
It prevents me
that's
from
weird.
Doing anything.
Yeah, that's
What's
weird
that?
To me. To that you would go and move and you would be aware that it's in there. I mean, to me, that's just mm-hmm. kind of strange.
Well, you can feel it because all the screws, you know, the bumps from the screws, you can feel all that, especially if you push on it. You can definitely feel it. No doubt. I mean, it doesn't hurt per se. It's just, it's an odd feeling.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's an odd enough feeling for me to want to go get the plate taken out, unless I'd have a real reason to, because I don't really have too big of an issue with it. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, gotcha. The, let's take a look real quick at the, we'll say in the NFC for a moment, Seattle Seahawks beat the Houston Texans 41-38. Brandon, 79 points in this game. Seattle Seahawks team, this is the team that beginning of the season we were talking about having difficulty putting points on the board. No problem yesterday putting points on the board between these two teams. How about 854 yards of that was just through the air. That was just – Deshaun Watson had 402 yards through the air. Russell Wilson had 452 yards through the air. So the two quarterbacks alone put the ball in the air 854 yards. 854 yards. Now, I'm just curious. Let me look up let me see what the total offensive yards for these two teams. Let's see. How about 988 offensive yards between these two teams? 988. Holy smokes. Some of the more impressive numbers. This game was determined by 3 points. I mean, 41-38. And it kept going back and forth. In just about every single category, it was back and forth. Time of possession favored Houston by just a tad. I mean, a tad. 30 minutes and 22 seconds to 29 minutes and 38 seconds. 30 minutes and 22 seconds to 29 minutes and 38 seconds. In Houston, that was in favor of Houston. First downs, Houston 25, Seattle 21. Passing first downs, both teams had 15. I mean, if you look up and down the stat board, everything is just practically dead even on this game. But my God, I just can't get over. I never expected to see 79 yards put up between these two teams. I certainly never expected to see a score like this. Deshaun Watson was 19 of 30 for 402 yards, 4 touchdowns, but he had 3 interceptions. Russell Wilson, 26 of 41, 452 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 1 interception between the two quarterbacks. Two went to Paul Richardson for the Seattle Seahawks. Two went to Jimmy Graham. Holy smokes, we got Jimmy Graham in the mix. You know, it's interesting that they got Jimmy Graham the mix all of a sudden. Isn't that? Do you find that interesting? And then,
well, there's lots of trade rumors.
I was going to say, in the past couple of days, there have been trade talks about Jimmy Graham all over the place.
I don't think he's going anywhere. I think they need
Jimmy Graham getting 2 touchdowns, and you got to wonder whether that wasn't just a little bit of a setup. I'm serious. I mean,
they need him though. I don't see him being traded.
They're not
Seattle
using
doesn't
Brady.
Have a lot of
they're
what
not using
they
him.
Are now. They have the last couple of weeks.
Today or
no,
yesterday.
No. Go look back the last couple, 2 or 3 games. He's had a couple of weeks where he's had touchdowns now. He's actually getting more involved in the game, finally.
Well, I don't know what took him so long. I mean, for God's sake, he's been there for how many years now? Is this his third year? It's his third year with the team, isn't it?
Maybe, I think so.
Over on the Houston side, DeAndre Hopkins with a receiving touchdown. Will Fuller had two. Will Fuller's name, I don't know. Maybe it's I'd have to go back and check, but there's somebody we haven't – it seems to me we haven't heard their name called very much. Lamar Miller had a receiving touchdown as well. What do you – first of all, you've got you like Deshaun Watson. I'm not sold on him yet. That's just me. Maybe I should be. Maybe I'm being stubborn. I don't know. I think that
you
he
are.
And yeah, probably. I think, if I'm not mistaken, did I see a stat that he and let me just pull this up here. Am I correct? I am correct. Both he and Carson Wentz are tied for the most touchdowns by a quarterback in the entire league. Carson Wentz has 19. Deshaun Watson has 19. So maybe I should be on the Deshaun Watson bandwagon by now, but
he's been impressive. I mean, you got to look. I'm not saying he hasn't shown a few rookie mistakes here and there, but he's also looked very good. Very good. I like what I see. I mean, he's one of those guys. He actually reminds me a little bit of Wentz, where he does what he has to do to get the job done. You know, he runs a little, he throws well, makes big plays. I mean, obviously having DeAndre Hopkins on the other end of the ball isn't hurting him. You know, he has a Pro Bowl type receiver, but you know, he's making use of it. We've seen other quarterbacks get a Pro Bowl receiver and not be able to get the ball to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he is. So that's, you know, you got to, if you're a Texans fan, you got to be happy with what you're seeing, especially after, you know, their mess they've had at that position the last couple of years with the whole Brock Osweiler big signing and giving him away to get rid of his contract and, you know, no real plan. Now it looks pretty good.
I stand corrected here, and you brought up DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins, and I stand corrected on Will Fuller, just to clarify. And I'm not surprised because, look, I really haven't followed – I'll be the first one to admit, I really haven't followed the Houston Texans. In fact, we haven't, you know, you were bringing up the Buffalo Bills the other week. And that's a team, if we wanted to, we could talk about here because they won again yesterday against the Oakland. Wasn't it against the Oakland Raiders? Yes, it was against the Oakland Raiders. And so you got to wonder whether, in fact, the Buffalo Bills are for real. But we really haven't followed. We haven't seen much of this Houston Texans team.
We saw a couple games. We saw the Patriots Texans
game,
and we saw they were on either Sunday or Thursday Night Football. We watched them.
We had them. Yeah,
so
we
saw a couple games. We saw more of them than we have of the Bills. Let's just say
that's
that.
True. DeAndre Hopkins, though, and Will Fuller both lead the league in receiving touchdowns with 7 each. So between those two, there's 14 of there's 14 of Deshaun Watson's 19 touchdowns right there. 7 to DeAndre Hopkins and 7 to Will Fuller. So that was my ignorance and not knowing where Will Fuller was in the mix of everything. What do you make of both of these teams? First of all, let's go there for a second, because Houston's case right now, they're 3-4. They're in technically third place in the AFC South. We've talked about this AFC South before. You've said it before. I've already brought it up. Default division winners. You're probably going to have a default division winner out of here. You know, question is just going to be, is it going to be the Titans, the Jaguars, or the Houston Texans at this point? Titans and Jaguars sit up top. On the other hand, the Seattle Seahawks, and again, I go back to, you know, where's the dominance in the NFC. Is it the Seattle Seahawks outside of the Philadelphia Eagles? Is it the Seattle Seahawks? Technically, they sit atop the NFC West. They're just slightly above the Los Angeles Rams, probably by a tiebreaker. Looks like home record, perhaps a tiebreaker. Seattle Seahawks 5-2, leading the NFC West. Los Angeles Rams with the same record at 5-2. What's your assessment on both these teams at this point? Do the Houston Texans ultimately win the South?
I think so. The Titans just look too up and down to me. I can't, the Jaguars are, they're the same way. They're kind of up and down. And the Colts are just direct. So, yeah, I think the Texans got to be the clear leader, at least, in the AFC South right now. Maybe the Titans can string a few together. Maybe Jacksonville can string a few together. I like the overall makeup better of what I see from the Texans. I realize the Texans are a game back, but I think the Texans have a better defense. I think the Texans, I think they have an advantage at quarterback. Although I'm not knocking Mariota. I like what I see out of Watson and what he has around him versus the Titans.
I like Mariota, I'm going to be honest here. I'm starting to wonder whether that team, the Titans, need a change in coaching leadership. Maybe I don't know. Maybe that's what that team needs. The team has done, from the standpoint of the front office, they've gone out and gotten Mariota some weapons around him in recent years. So there has been an effort made to build a team around Mariota. I agree with you. I kind of thought this was going to be the Titans' year to make that next step. But it doesn't appear to be taking hold at this point. Seattle, would you, at this point right now, would you still give the nod to Seattle over the Rams? Or, because again, here we go again. We're kind of sitting here. We're not sure what the Rams are at this point. But here's one thing we do know. We know probably more about Seattle than we do about the Rams, right? And so it's almost easier to give the nod of the division to the Seattle Seahawks, isn't it?
Yeah, I would think so. I think the Seahawks will probably have the better record when it's all said and done, although the Rams do have a propensity for beating the Seahawks. So, never say never. Let's put it that way. You know what I mean? It's one of those that you just got to take it in stride. You know what I mean?
I'm just looking at
it. It could go either
here.
Way. I would think I got to give the nod to Seattle just off the top.
And just talking about all of the different teams that we've just talked about here for a moment, the Rams, the Seattle Seahawks, the Houston Texans, the Tennessee Titans. And I'm just looking at this upcoming week's matchups and lines, what they are. And I really hate looking at the lines on Monday, which is why I prefer doing the show on Tuesday. I don't like looking at early lines. I prefer to look at the lines for the first time on Tuesday, but, the Rams are a 3.5 point road favorite. They're a 3.5 point road favorite against the Giants. So on the road, so they're going to travel all the way across the country and they're still nonetheless almost a 4 point favorite against the Giants. That's how bad the Giants are.
Yep. I don't have a problem with that line either.
I don't have a problem.
Just being up front.
The Houston Texans are a 12.5 point home favorite against the Indianapolis Colts. The Tennessee Titans are a 5.5 point favorite against the Baltimore Ravens. Ravens aren't getting any respect at all anymore, nor should they, in my opinion. And the Seattle Seahawks are a 7.5 point home favorite against the Washington Redskins. Oh, boy. Where are my fraud Carolina Panthers, just out of curiosity? Carolina Panthers at home hosting the Atlanta Falcons. What do you think the line is on that one, Brandon?
Who is this again? Who's hosting the Falcons?
The Carolina Panthers are hosting the Atlanta Falcons.
Oh, wow. That's a tough one because both teams are not doing the greatest. I got to think Carolina is still favored, but not by the full three. I'm going to say 1.5.
Very good. How about two? How about two? Carolina favored by two. Boy, that goes to show you what kind of a fraud team they are. I'm telling you. I really am loathing the Carolina Panthers this year. Seriously. The Pittsburgh Steelers, 20-15 yesterday over the Detroit Lions. Ben Roethlisberger was 17 of 31. One touchdown, one interception, 87.7 passer rating. Le'Veon Bell, 76 yards on the ground and a touchdown. Boy, the new guy, though, Brandon, everybody's talking about, Juju Smith-Schuster. You got to love this Pittsburgh Steelers team. They always got the guys with three names. Don't you, you remember? Yeah, that's kind of a thing with them, isn't it? Juju Smith-Schuster, 7 receptions, 193 yards, and 1 touchdown. Just completely overshadowed Antonio Brown's 5 receptions and 70 yards. Matt Stafford, 27 to 45, 423 yards from Matt Stafford, but no touchdowns, no interceptions, 91.3 passer rating. Question for you. The Pittsburgh Steelers put the Detroit Lions to bed for the season, right? I mean, that's it. We can stop talking about the Detroit Lions
now.
It
depends what happens with the rest of the Vikings and how they keep going. If the Vikings keep going, you know, I don't know. They could. I don't know if you call anybody done per se, except the obvious ones. So,
well,
I don't
one
know.
Of the obvious
I don't
ones.
Know.
The obvious
well,
ones
the,
would only
the Cleveland
be
the one. Browns, the Colts, the 49ers.
The San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah,
49ers,
they're done.
New York
they're
Giants.
They're all done. Right, the Giants, exactly. Those are the done teams. You know, the NFC North is kind of in flux because you got the whole, you know, Packers without a quarterback, the Vikings quarterback situation. Yeah, I mean, it's not looking good for Detroit, I'll say that. But they're really only 2 games behind the Vikings in the loss column. So, you know, if they start stringing some wins, if they look like they did in the beginning of the year, they could turn it around.
All right. I don't know. I just don't have a feel particularly after, I don't know, after last night, after what they just looked uninspired. That's kind of what I came away from that game. What else did we want to look at here real quick? The Oakland Raiders, Brandon, Buffalo Bills, 34-14 over the Oakland Raiders. Now let me just pull the numbers up here real quick before we completely run out of time here this evening. The Derek Carr was 31 of 49, 313 yards, a touchdown, 2 interceptions. Tyrod Taylor, 20 of 27, 165 yards, 1 touchdown, no interceptions, 101.6 passer rating. LeSean McCoy had 151 yards on the ground, 27 carries, and a touchdown. This was a team, the Oakland Raiders, not dissimilar to, I guess the Tennessee Titans, where I kind of thought, okay, they're going to take the next step. Derek Carr had the injury at the end of the season last year. That knocked them out of any possibility of any hope for them for last season. And you kind of thought, okay, Derek Carr's going to come back and they're going to be okay and we're going to take the next step. And then Derek Carr gets injured for a week or so. And it seemed like from that point forward, the entire team just kind of fell apart. And now they're looking at what, they're three and four, aren't they? Let me just check here real quick. Three and five. They're 3-5 now at this point. And in the basement of the AFC West. I mean,
so
it's another
Chargers.
One. Well, okay. I'm not saying anything good about them either, but I mean, this is
no.
you kind of get the sense at this point that's it for the Raiders. I mean, at this point, at 3-5.
No, I'm not ready to write them off just yet.
Okay.
You gotta look at some point, you know, for wild cards and teams that are on the borderline, like, you know, the 3-5s and the 4-3 and 4s and 4-3s, you know, somebody's going to have to step up. You know, there's a lot of mid pack direct right now in the AFC. The Bills are the only second place team that are 5-2. Everybody else is 4-4 or worse. So if 4-4, 3-5, you're not much different. So I think the Raiders are too good of a team to say they're done. I'd sooner say the Chargers are done, but they keep, you know, they find a way to win games that I don't think they should win too. So I, you know, who knows? Well, you know, it all depends on who can get hot. And I'm not ready to say the Raiders are out yet.
All right.
I think they may be out for the division, especially although they do have a win head to head against the Chiefs. So, but they are three behind in a loss column. That's not good. So I can't, I kind of trying to convince myself over here.
I got you. Well, you're a lot more. Yeah. I mean, you're giving a lot more benefit of the doubt to a lot more teams, I guess, maybe than I am.
Well, there's certain teams that look bad that, you know, are done. And I don't think the Raiders look, they don't look like the Colts. They don't look like the Browns. They don't look like the Giants. They don't look like the 49ers. You know what I mean? They're clearly better than all those teams. On paper, they were a contender to win this division. So you got to think they can come back. You know, they come back to a 10-6, 9-7 record, which probably, you know, could happen if they get hot. They could grab a wild card with that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there you go. That is there's 90 minutes gone just like that. Zap. And we've kind of gone through just about everything in week 8 of the NFL. You've got one more game, and that's coming up here in just a matter of moments between the Denver Broncos and the Kansas City Chiefs Monday Night Football. So we're going to let you go to get over to checking that one out. But before I do that, let me remind you, please, to make sure that you are here with us on Thursday night for our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show, coming to you here at 7 p.m. Eastern time, as we always do on Thursday nights. What number? 316, I believe. I think it's going to be 316. And we should have Chris Davis with us from the fourth podcast, and Matt will be joining me. Matt Tobias will be joining me along with Mike Appel. Talk a little NHL, and we'll get into everything that you can possibly imagine in the world of sports, particularly in the NFL and NHL. All right, there you go. Many thanks to everybody that's been listening in here this evening. Halloween coming up tomorrow evening. Enjoy yourself. Stay safe. And hey, get out there. Enjoy your games. And hey, enjoy tonight's Monday Night Football game.